for tapes of end time meetings, deliverance services, or Lake Hamilton Bible Campground's publication, Voices from His Excellent Glory, Declaring the Kingdom. Writes Post Office Box 21516, Hot Springs National Park, Arkansas, zip 71903.
Our website is www.LakeHamiltonBibleCamp.com and LHBCOnline.com. There are many free audio files there. It's like going to Bible school at home.
Wednesday afternoon, December the 27th, 1989. Midwinter Family Camp Meeting being held at Lake Hamilton Bible Campgrounds, Hot Springs National Park, Arkansas. Earlene Moody is the speaker of the afternoon. Well, our youngest school teacher of Lake Hamilton Bible Camp is going to teach this afternoon. Our elder school teacher's not here until Friday or Saturday. She'll be back. She'll have a lesson for us Sunday morning. I think she's 85, I believe. And she brings us a good lesson every Sunday morning. And all of you that'll be here Sunday will enjoy her lesson. So Sister Di will be back to teach us Sunday morning. But this afternoon, our teacher is Earlene Moody. And she also is a school teacher. That's been her profession. And the Lord has kept her in that profession, even though she is out of the official profession. She's now in the Lord's profession of a school teacher. Mm-hmm. Come, teacher.
I want to thank Brother Glenn for, you know, having the courage to let women speak. You know, the Bible says that we're to give witness of the things that the Lord has done in our life. And today this is going to be somewhat of a testimony, a witness. At the same time, I'm going to kind of share with you some of the things that the Lord has taught Jean and me. It's sort of a family type of lesson, and you may have to stop for me for a while because I get a little emotional about this subject. And I was reading in the Amplified Bible, and I found out, how many of you know the reason we have very little discernment in the church today? Do you know why? I'd like to share with you Philippians 1, 9 through 11. Philippians 1, 9 through 11. You know, the thing I appreciate about my Amplified Bible is that it helps people like me who don't understand the Greek and the Hebrew, and we don't know too much about a lot of these things, and sometimes it'll add something that'll really give us a little insight. It really isn't adding anything to the Word of God. It's explaining the fuller meaning of what was actually said. And I'd like to read this to you, and as we go down through here, see if you can find out what it is that causes us to have no discernment. And this I pray, that your love may abound yet more and more, extend to its fullest development in knowledge and all keen insight, that your love may display itself in greater depth of acquaintance and more comprehensive discernment, so that you may surely learn to sense what is vital and approve and prize what is excellent and of real value, recognizing the highest and the best and distinguishing the moral differences. If you look at our world today, you can see we lack this. We have children and young people and older people in the church who can't distinguish moral values. And that you may be untainted and pure and unerring and blameless, so that with hearts sincere and certain and unsolved, you may approach the day of Christ, not stumbling nor causing others to stumble. May you abound in and be filled with the fruits of righteousness, of right standing with God and right doing, which come through Jesus Christ, the Anointed One, to the honor and praise of God, that His glory may be both manifested and recognized. And the reason I wanted to use that is because in our family, Jean and I had a much more loving home life for our children than our parents had for us. And with our little grandson, we've watched our daughter and her husband have a more loving relationship with their son than we had with ours. And the remarkable thing about this little fellow was that on the day that he was born, he was laying in a little crib in the bed by his mother. And she was just sort of coming out of everything and not talking or anything. But the daddy walks in and he says, "How are you?" And this little baby, only 4 or 5 hours old, maybe even less than that, pushed with his hands, turned his head to his daddy's voice. Now, throughout the time that my daughter was pregnant, this husband and father would tell the child and the wife that he loved the baby and wanted it to come to live with them. If the baby was restless, he would lay his hands on the baby and pray for it. And the baby would quiet down immediately. And when it was born, it knew its father's voice. And since that time, I watched them discipline him. They disciplined him, you might say rather strictly. But they always talk to him, and they always love him. They always explain things. And we see a little boy, not quite two, who's extremely loving. Now, when you're born, there are a lot of different types of love in the Bible, but they fall predominantly in three categories. I had Kevin's computer out up there, and I was going through there to see how many times was love mentioned in the Bible. The computer went kaput at 10,000. I mean, it just flared up and said, "What else do you want?" more or less. And I didn't know if it only counted to 10,000 or what, but I didn't know why it stopped counting there and started asking me other questions. I'd say that it's one of the most often repeated words in the Bible. I don't know if that 10,000 is all or not, but that's an awfully lot of times for a word to appear. Probably "the" and "of" may be the only words that appear more. The greatest hindrance to us being able to receive love from God and understand it and give it out is rejection. And most of our rejection comes to us so early in life, we have no idea how to handle it. So this rejection cuts us off from other people. It cuts us off from God. When people become saved, they usually relate to God the way they related to their parents, and especially the father. I've noticed with my little grandson, I'm going to be using him a great deal because I think he's a good example. His mother can speak to him, and he will obey. But his father can speak to him, and he almost always immediately obeys. If his father is irritated with him or in some way getting on to him, he responds with a great deal more emotion than he does when mama does it. When people reject us, we have a hard time feeling close to them. If you have a hard time feeling close to God, you need to examine yourself to see if you dealt with rejection. I would say it is Satan's number one trump card. He used it on Jesus Christ from birth to death, and he'll use it on you too. You won't escape. Even if your parents do love you perfectly, he'll come and pick something and eat away on it. Sometimes when you read the Bible, you look at the different characters in the Old Testament, and you can see how rejection goes immediately to bitterness and faster than the speed of light to rebellion. And then it's just the door is open. I was looking at these different types of love in the Bible, and this is, Gene and I have a computer at home, and I got a printout on only three types. And this is not 10,000 verses or 10,000 times. But it seemed like it came in three major categories. And I'm not sure of my pronunciation, so of the Greek. But the one that I see the most of in the Bible is phileo. Is that right? How do you pronounce that, fellows? Okay. And it's the kind of love you have when you're first born. The world revolves around you and what you want. And that's all you're interested in. You're not particularly interested in other things. The verses that are used, and I just did Matthew and Mark and Luke and John, the verses that are used to talk about this particular type of love, here are some of them. If you are of the world would love his own. But because you are not of the world, and I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites, for they love to stand praying in the synagogues and in the corners of the street, that they may be seen of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. And they love the uttermost rooms at feasts and the chief seats of the synagogue. And you know, I find it kind of strange that Jesus asked Peter, Simon Peter, three times, if you love me. And the more I pondered that, the more I think what he was doing was bringing Peter through the different types of love. He starts out and he asks him, so when they had dined, and this is in phileo love, when they had dined, Jesus said to Simon Peter, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? This is John 21:15. And he said unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He said to him, feed my lambs. I think it's in the 20, let's go over there. John 21. I have a new Bible and it doesn't like to go anywhere with me. Jesus asked him that in 15. And when you get over here to verse 19, you'll see that Peter is still right there. And let's go to 18. I assure you, most solemnly tell you, when you were young, you girded yourself, put on your own belt and girdle, and you walked about wherever you pleased to go. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone will girdle you and carry you where you do not wish to go. He said this to indicate by what kind of death Peter would glorify God. And after this, he said to him, follow me. Now look what Peter does. It's so like us. But Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following, the one who also had leaned back on his breast at supper and had said, Lord, who is it that is going to betray you? When Peter saw John, or when he saw him, he said to the Lord Jesus, what about this man? And we know that he said it in that manner because of what Jesus said. Jesus said to him, if I want you to stay, survive or live till I come, if I want him to stay, survive, or live until I come, what is that to you? What concern is it of yours? You follow me. So we know by that when Jesus was talking to Simon Peter, he was not mature in his ability to love. He was way back there where most of us are or just have been. Jesus wanted Simon Peter, this is what I think, to grow up in love so that he could give out what God had given him, so that he wouldn't be always so concerned about himself. Am I going to be the greatest? Am I going to do as well as John? Do I look as good as John? Will I look as good as John when I die? Will people reverence me as much as John after I'm gone? The next step, I call this like adolescence. You know, that's a real troubled time, a hard time. You want to go back to be a kid, and you want to grow up too, and you just go back and forth between. And this is selfish to some degree, but not as much as phileo. And this is agapeo, I guess. That's right? All right. It says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. It's in that one that we have, love the Lord with all your heart and soul and mind. If I hadn't looked these up and had them run off by the computer according to their Greek meaning, I would have thought that should have been in agape love. But it isn't. Honor thy father and thy mother. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Thou shalt love the Lord with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. Love your enemies. Do good to them that hate you. Pray for those that despitefully use you. If you love those who love you, what thank have you? For sinners also love those who love them. But love your enemies, do good and lend, hoping for nothing again, and your reward shall be great, and you shall be the children of the Most High. In that state, we don't really do much that's going to give out to other people. We're still sort of giving in, getting in, trying to get things organized in our mind. And then we have the other kind of love. Oh, I want to say something else here about families. Having been a school teacher, I've run across many, many children, and many have passed through my in front of my desk. And in the latter years that I taught, I could almost tell you about the family I could almost know even the instance that happened to the child without meeting the parents, because there's so many patterns that are formed. If a child does not bond well with his parents, or if his parents reject him, he takes up all kind of bizarre and crazy and wild habits and things he tries to do to make himself feel okay. A lot of us rebel, like I did, for the simple fact that you want somebody to notice you. They don't notice you if you're not doing something bad, and so you take up bad behavior. And children learn what you live. They don't learn what you teach. They learn what attitude are you fixing the meal in? What attitude does Daddy go off to work with? How does he act when he comes in the door? Does he immediately say, get out of my way and go turn on sports? Or does he have a word or two for the family? It's your attitude as you care for your children and as you teach them and as you discipline them, that's going to make the difference. If it's done in a hateful manner, and I was an abused child until I was 10 years old, and somehow by the mercy of God, that slipped from my memory, and I didn't remember it. But I can remember saying something when I was going to have my first child. And I said it over and over and over to myself. And if I'd been alert, I would have caught a clue, but I didn't. I would say to myself, when I am angry, really angry, I will never, never, never touch them. I was not to find out until I was 50 years old that I was an abused child. But it did affect me, and it did affect my life. So as I cared for my children, I always wanted them to know that I really and truly wanted them and that I really and truly enjoyed them. If we don't let our children feel that they belong in the sense that we want them to belong to us and we want them with us, we'll do these things to them. We'll turn them to drugs, to cults, to the occult, to sex perversion, to tremendous and unnatural attempts to get power and money, and we'll turn on them when they do these things. And I wanted to give you a little incident that happened in our life and another of our friends' lives. We each had daughters, each about the same age. Each had had something really horrible happen in their life that they couldn't cope with yet. For our daughter, it was the death of her brother. For the other girl, it was other trauma in her family. So when this little girl of the other family decided that she could no longer live with her husband and remain alive and was seeking a divorce, her father, who was a pastor, told us, she will never darken my door again. Well, little did we know that, we suspected and we had a feeling, and I guess we knew in our heart, that our daughter would someday tell us the same thing in the very near future. And our response was, we're here. Use us in any way you can to get help. And so when this other father was telling us he wasn't going to let his girl come back in the house again ever because she was going to get a divorce, we talked with him and told him that at this time in our daughter's life, they needed us more than ever, and that our door would always be open for our daughter. And he went and he prayed about it, and he decided that he wasn't showing the love of God, so he invited his daughter back into the life of the family, with beautiful results for both daughters. His daughter is now serving with Toy Makers, the play Toy Makers they take into foreign countries where they can't say anything about Christ, and so they give this little play. And although I'm not too much on drama for Christians, I suppose it's all right in that case. But anyway, the girl did get delivered, she did come out of it, and she now has a very stable life. But it takes parents going an extra mile when you have had something happen to a child that you can't take care of altogether. And we couldn't take care of what happened to our daughter altogether. You know, we could help what we could, but we were hurting so bad we weren't a great deal of use to her. at that time. And so we neglected her. And a lot of things hurt her because of that. Now let's go on to the next one. This is agape love. This is God's kind of love. It's got benevolence by it, a love feast, charity, charitable, dear, and love. And here are some of the verses that come in there. Greater love hath no man than this, that he will lay down his life for his friends. But God commandeth his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. I have never been able to quite comprehend that. You know, it's still something that just is awesome to me. But woe to you Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and all manner of herbs and pass over judgment and the love of God. These you ought to have done and not to have left the other undone. Neither height nor depth nor any other creature should be able to separate us from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. But the fruit of the Spirit is love. Look what kind of love that is. It's not the first two categories that you have when you come into the world and you begin to grow, or you get saved and you begin to grow in God. This is a mature love. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, and faith. But God is rich in mercy for his great love wherein he loved us. And now I want to show you a little something in my life, which someday God is going to let me get up here and just teach you something. And I don't have to tell you my dirt. But this is 1 Corinthians 13th chapter. And most of us know it by heart. We've known it from heart since we were in grade school, some of us. And you know, sometimes I ask the Lord, how can you ever, ever forgive me for getting saved when I was 10 or 12 years old and not growing a day till I was 40? You know, I just can't hardly forgive myself for that. I have to sometimes just actually say, I forgive myself for being so lazy and so careless. I used to read this, and I used to think, Lord, this is absolutely, totally impossible. It's impossible. And I used to be one of these people who didn't even try to appropriate the grace of God. If you did me anything, I did you 10 times. I enjoyed it thoroughly every time. And I would plot with my demons, although I didn't know it that there were demons then. But these demons would tell me about a situation that this person and I would be in, which would be a public situation. And I would know exactly what they were going to say, and I knew exactly what I was going to say. And the occasion would be just as it had been told to me, or just as I thought it out in my head. And I'd do it, and I loved to watch them squirm. Does that tell you the state of my love? I mean, it was even below the lowest level. And then God is telling me that I need to do these things? I would read this, and it's taken me many years, to be able to see that some of these things have actually begun to come to pass in my life. I'm beginning to grow up. I'm beginning to get a little maturity about love. But, oh, I do fall backwards so badly. Let's start with verse 1. If I can speak with the tongues of men and even angels, but have not love, that reasoning... Now, see, your intellect is going to always be in effect throughout your Christian life. You can't bypass it. And God's not going to bypass it. Reasoning. What do you do? What do you reason with? Your mind, your soul. That reasoning, intentional, spiritual devotion, such as is inspired by God's love for us and in us, I am only a noisy gong and a clanging cymbal. And I've felt like that many times. Just like I was going around making a lot of noise, clonging myself to death, and nothing really was happening. So it's not a matter of can you speak in tongues and can you interpret tongues and can you be so impressive when you're in a public gathering. This is my interpretation to me. This is what I felt like the Lord told me. It's what are you doing when you're not speaking in tongues? What are you thinking and what are you planning on doing when you're alone by yourself and you know nobody's looking? What are you getting into? Are you doing like I was, flirting around with retaliation? Or are you thinking, Lord, bless this person who has hurt me. Give them, Lord, all the grace and mercy they need. Well, I didn't do that in the past. I've learned to do it in the last 16 years. And if I have prophetic power, the gift of interpreting the divine will and purpose, and understand all the secret truths and mysteries, and possess all knowledge, and if I have sufficient faith so that I can remove mountains, but have not God's love in me, I am nothing but a useless nobody. I haven't yet moved any mountains that I know of, any actual physical mountains. So if you know, if that was a criteria to judge my relationship to God, I'd have a F minus. I'm not very much, I don't guess I've ever been used in any prophetic way. I don't understand tongues many times when they're given in the congregation, but I can tell you immediately if it's wrong before it's ever interpreted. I don't know why that is. I don't understand very many mysteries of God, although I do understand some. And I do possess a little bit more knowledge now than I used to have. But I still feel lacking on verse 2. And even if I dole out all that I have to the poor in providing food, and if I surrender my body to be burned in order that I may glory, but have not God's love in me, I am gaining nothing. And you know, after Jean and I lost Byron, and we moved to Baton Rouge, Jean would dole out everything we had to anybody who came and stood up in the pulpit. And we used to have these fighting matches in the church, and right in the congregation. One time this man came and gave this real pitiful plea, and I saw Jean going for his checkbook, and I got almost violent. And he told me to be quiet. True, isn't it, Jean? He told me to be quiet. Behave myself. People were looking at me. But I was mad, and I was going for that checkbook. And I was mad because something inside of me told me that man was all wrong, that he was a complete phony. Well, at that time in my life, I repented, I beat myself over the head, I would have pulled my hair out and kicked myself if I could have, because I thought that I was going to go to hell, because I was thinking these things about one of God's anointed men. And I believe you had better be very, very careful what you say. But I didn't understand discerning the spirits at all. I didn't know that was what was happening to me. Later on, we found out. What I was thinking was right, but I didn't know. I was ignorant. And so we would have these fighting matches in church over him giving everything we had away. He thought if he gave everything away, he could make up for not having loved the Lord, loved us, served the Lord, given the Lord all the money he should have given him in the first place. And I was somewhat guilty, too. I was one who was always trying to give things, you know, clothes, food, stuff like that. So we were both falling into this role. We were in this because we had guilt and we didn't know what to do with it. We had, we just didn't feel like we were quite up to par. We didn't realize that God forgave us for these things. And this is where he began to deal with me as a wife and as mother. You know, up here he's into things outside of the home. But in verse 4, he narrowed it down, and he got right down where I was. Love endures long and is patient and kind. Well, I'm of a German, English, and American Indian background. And if you know those people very well, you know patience. And enduring long is not one of their qualities. And I guess it all came down to me, because I could be extremely violent, although I wasn't very often. It happened so seldom that if I did lose my temper, my whole family disappeared. But I was not patient, and I was not very kind. I have always had, since I was a child, I was raised with 5 boys, and to take care of myself, I developed a sharp tongue. And I could come back at them real quick. So I wasn't kind with my tongue, I was kinder with my actions than with my tongue. Love never is envious. Well, after I married Gene, he took me around with him in his engineering life, and he bought me fine homes and the very finest sections of some of the very finest southern cities. And I didn't realize or know that I loved this stuff. You know, I mean, it came and I enjoyed it, but I did not know how much I loved it or how much I depended on it to feel okay about myself. So when we changed our lifestyle, it wasn't long until I was Indian. All my friends who lived where I used to live and who had what I used to have in houses. And I didn't want them to come over there in my neighborhood to see me. And I envied them so much that Gene can tell you that I actually would tell him how I hated the house and would never stay there. And I roamed all over. I didn't get into trouble. I just went to nice little Christian ladies' meetings all the time. But I wouldn't stay home, and I wouldn't do my work. I was envious. It says in this Bible, Amplified, it says, "Nor boils over with jealousy." I would say that the day before I got my first deliverance, that I did boil over with jealousy. I would harass Gene on a continual basis to buy me another house. I don't like it here. I don't feel at home here. It is not boastful or vainglorious. Now, I was a young girl who had suffered a lot of rejection, and I was boastful, and I was vain. I was so vain that I wouldn't wear anything out of the store, and I was an extremely fine seamstress. So I would design and make my own clothes. I didn't want to see you with one like I have on. Sorry, it was terrible. I was haughty. Although I had come from the mountains of Tennessee, and my parents had been probably lower middle class, when I got into this other class of people that was a little nicer, I didn't want anything to do with the ones I came from. You know, if you came to church and your hair was all fixed and your dress was all nice and I didn't see anybody else with a dress on like yours and you had a car at least as good as ours, well, I'd have something to do with you. But otherwise, I didn't have time for you. Does not display itself haughtily. Now, this is, you know, just because I'm telling you this from a wife and a woman doesn't mean men don't have these problems, too. I used to get so tickled, and Gene and I used to have these horrible discussions, and he'd tell me how I was supposed to be a nice, sweet, submissive wife and look like a Hank. And he's never been one that would fancy himself up. He just has an aversion to that, so he was always plain. But we'd go to church. Dear Lord, please don't let me say something I shouldn't. And the pastor's wife would look like she had been run over by the tractor. And he had velvet lapels, studded buttons, and, I mean, he just really looked like a redbird. And so you fellows, you can be as bad as we are. Just because this is a girl up here talking doesn't change it. I mean, you know, I see, and I've seen, so don't just say, well, you know, poor little pitiful woman. Is not conceited, arrogant, or inflated with pride. If you'd stuck a pin in me, you'd let out about 100 gallons of hot air. You know, I was very conceited. Not only did Gene put me in some really fine homes, but then I have a lot of talent in art and with the sewing machine and the needle. And I'd go to work, and mine had to be the best on the street. Gene, you should be up here so they can see your face. It's all true. You can tell by looking at his face if you're in front of him, that's all true. Is not rude. Now, I always used to say, I'm not rude. But in the Amplified, it has a little parenthesis there, and it says, unmannerly. I was very unmannerly. I really didn't care much about manners. If it got me what I wanted, I could be mannerly. I have nice manners. But otherwise,
Yeah. And does not act unbecomingly. Oh, I'm going to skip that. Love, God's love in us, does not insist on its own rights. Now, Gene was never one to give in to me. He didn't make a very good Ahab. And I was a pretty good Jezebel. So there was a good knocking of heads in our house. I wanted my way, and when Gene's around, my daughter says this. She said when she was growing up, when Daddy was around, Mama was very cooperative and helpful and obeyed him. But when he wasn't there, she did as she pleased. That's true. I did it. I insisted on my own rights and my own way. Gene and I have had many word wars over my rights. In the last 16 years, I don't think we've had many, have we? But until then, we had them on a fairly regular basis. Does not insist on its own way. My way was the best way. Gene could make an investment, and I wouldn't say a word, but after he made it, I'd come in there with all these questions. And the Lord showed me one day that that was part of Jezebel that I had been delivered of, yet I was still acting that way. And he told me if I kept it up, I'd have her back. And he showed me how I'd use that tactic, not aware of it, but doing it, to needle him and help cause him make any bad investments that I could. And after he did it, then I needled him for losing the money. So, you know, you can get yourself so bound up in these kind of things that, you know, all this tightness for yourself and your greed and your covetousness, but you include everybody around you. It is not self-seeking. Do I need to say anything about that one? I've already told you how bad it was. I wanted everything for my family. And I went to great lengths to get everything for my family. If Gene hadn't balanced me, our children would have been ruined by age 2. It is not touchy or fretful or resentful. I had probably the best grade of any living human creature in all 3 of those. Touchy, fretful, and resentful. I could decide I wasn't going to speak to Gene for 24 hours or 2 weeks, and I could just about carry it off, too. Fretful. You won't tell him, Gene. I was able to fret over everything. If I couldn't find something of my own to fret about, I'd fret about somebody else's. Touchy? Just don't touch me the wrong way. It takes no account of the evil done to it. And one day, I realized that this was beginning to happen in my life. You know, people like to tell me somebody did me something, generally speaking, or I don't notice it. That's a long way from where you kept a running mental score on everybody you knew. It pays no attention to a suffered wrong. You know, that would just about remake every marriage in the whole world. Just that little bit right there. It takes no account of an evil done to it. It pays no attention to a suffered wrong. Now, my way of handling this thing was when I felt like that Gene had given me a suffered wrong, because I made him suffer. Yeah. Does that sound like do not return evil for evil? It does not rejoice at injustice and unrighteousness, but rejoices when right and truth prevail. I wasn't too bad about that, because if you did what you shouldn't do, I enjoyed seeing you get it. I didn't like it when I got it, but I liked it when you did. But you know, I've come to the place now where I see someone who does something they shouldn't, or someone who falls in their Christian life, and it hurts me now. I don't go around, you know, telling everybody, look what I see, and do you know what I heard? I usually, Gene and I get together and we pray. And we pray often for that person. So I know that Gene and I are making some progress. I know I'm making more progress than him because he didn't do most of this stuff. Now, this was a good one. Right before I got my first deliverance, I was threatening divorce. Love bears up under anything and everything that comes. I was threatening divorce not because I didn't love Gene, but because he wouldn't do what I wanted him to do. He wouldn't get me that other house. He wouldn't move here and move there and do this and do that. One time he told me that I wanted so many things he couldn't do them if he lived to be a million. You know. Is ever ready to believe the best in every person. I'm inching up on that. I'm beginning to kind of get down to the bottom end of the ruler and inch up just a little bit. Its hopes are fadeless under all circumstances. I mean, you just had to dash my hopes a little bit in the past, and I could just really come apart at the seams. It endures everything without weakening. When I read this, I think, Lord, how much I desire to be like this. I desire to grow to this point in my life. Listen to this one. Love never fails, never fades out, or becomes obsolete, or comes to an end. Now, this is not talking about the kind of love where you get what you want, so you can look good, or people will admire you, or because it's for your family, or because it's for the group you're in. Your group's got to be the best group, the one that everybody looks up to. It's not that kind of thing. As for prophecy, the gift of interpreting divine will and purpose, it will be fulfilled, and it will pass away. As for tongues, like he was saying this morning, when a lot of us got tongues, we acted like we belonged to the devil and not to God. I mean, we may, in the church where Jenny and I went, the people who didn't have it felt like we thought we were some stuff and that they were not quite saved yet. They just were a little contaminated and we didn't want to have too much to do with them. As for tongues, they will be destroyed and cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. It will lose its value and be superseded by truth. And that's where I'm going to stop. But you know, as I came through from deliverance, I still did not know how to forgive. When Jean was talking, Jean and I did not know anything about demons. We didn't know what the word deliverance in the context that God used it with me meant. And so I didn't understand about forgiveness, and I began to study forgiveness in the Bible. And when you forgive somebody, it doesn't mean that you forget that incident necessarily. I have one friend that every time I see her, I think of the incidents when we run and hug one another. She's become one of my best friends because we did like he talked about. We went and I apologized because it was my fault. And we began to be friends again. But I asked the Lord, tell me, teach me about forgiveness. Because at that time, I never forgot anything. I could tell you a conversation that I had 20 years in the past. I could tell it to you verbatim. Where someone hurt me. And as I studied over here about forgiveness, and I looked up the meanings and everything, forgiveness means to, well, you look at what the Lord has done for you, and you look at what this person has done to you, and what this person has done has absolutely no value, no eternal value at all, compared to the millions that God has done for you. So you look at it and you take an account of it and you say, it's of no value. This thing I'm holding against you has no value. I put it down. It's not going to stand between us. And while I was trying to get this thing firm in my mind, the Lord told me, and we live in the country where fish are very much around, and so the smell of fish frequently, when it's rotting, is extremely bad. So the Lord told me, he said, Erling, just look at it this way. He said, just think of all these things that you've had against people as a dead fish. And you've been carrying it around with you all these years. It stinketh. Put it down. Let it go. And I said, that makes a lot of sense, Lord. I understand that perfectly. I can do that. And I began to do it. Now, at first I slipped up occasionally when someone really did me something bad, and especially if they attacked Jean. Then I would start my telephone calling and my getting even. And everywhere I'd open my Bible, it would say, vengeance is mine, I will repay, thus saith the Lord. And I'd walk through my house and I'd say, I'm not going to call it, I'm not going to call it. Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord, to the top of my voice. And eventually, it would go from up here where I had seen it and read it, and it got down here into the spirit of me, and I could do it. And my disobedience, which came out of, you know, my rejection. And Gene would tell me, don't do this thing, whatever I told him I was going to do. And I got to the point where I would say, God, I'm going to obey that man if it kills me. And sometimes it almost did. But I noticed something. The first few times that I did do what he said, the thing turned out right. And I saw I didn't have to be concerned about that at all. I needed to talk it over with him, pray with him, and believe God. And I didn't have to spend all that time doing all this crazy stuff that I was doing because I had these evil spirits that were there because of rejection and the lack of love in my family. And I know my family situation was probably to some people, a heaven. I know mine wasn't the worst that could have been. But I do know the one who mends and restores, the one who teaches you how to forgive and how to love yourself. I used to go to LTI in Baton Rouge, which is Louisiana Training Institute, and Gene and I, you know, Gene and I never have elegant plans. We were going to go to LTI so that these young people could get established there and they wouldn't need us. So our figuring was we'll go 3 times and quit. You know, we didn't have any great plans. On the third time that we went, we didn't see anybody, so we went on back to the compound where we were supposed to go. And there was nobody there, so we thought, well, they've all gone in. We're late. And we got in there, and they shut the door behind me. We all went separate places, our daughter and her. The young man she was dating, Gene went to the ladies of all things. I couldn't believe that. And I went to the boys who were, some of them were young, 7 years old. And I walked in that place, and just to show you how completely devoid of love I was, even after receiving the baptism, I walked in that place, I looked around that room at those 97 boys who had broken the law and been picked up, and I said to the fellow who was their guard that day, I said, let me out of here. Instead, he shuts the door behind me and locks it. And I had this tremendous urge just to run to that door and blast my way through that glass. I did not want to be in there. And I did not care about those boys. And so I was standing there and I was saying, Lord, you know, I just kind of feel there's something really wrong with me that I don't want to be in here. And I said, could you tell me, Lord, something to say to these boys? I've been rebellious, but I've never done things like they've done, and I don't know how to talk to them. I cannot understand them. And so this thing came to me. It said, Earlene, ask them how hard they worked and how much they planned and how carefully they saved their money to arrive at this place. So I'm desperate. I hadn't planned on speaking. I didn't know anything to say to these kids. So I stand up there and I say, he keeps telling me, say something. And so I said, well, you know, I've only got one thing to ask you. And I asked him, I said, just what the Lord told me. I want you to know that every last one of them rolled off their benches, fell on the floor, started laughing, poking their fingers. Took him 15 minutes to get them back up on the benches. And I was standing there, I said, Lord, you didn't say that, did you? That was not you. I said, oh, Lord, what am I going to do? And he said, well, you could ask them then who made a fool out of them. So I said, Lord, that's really worse. But I couldn't think of a single thing to say. I couldn't even think of the name of Jesus. So I said, who made a fool out of you? And I expected them to do it again, you know. But they didn't. They just sat there. And I said, oh, Lord, what can I say now? And he said, well, you might try looking at them. And as I looked at them, I began to think, I had a 12-year-old child. I had a son. This son could be one of mine. This could have been mine. This is somebody's son. What am I going to say? What am I going to do? And Romans 6:16 came into my mind, and God had been dealing with me over that for over a year. to whomever you yield yourself, servant to obey, that's whose slave you're going to be. That's shortened and quoted Moody style, but that's what's in there. And that's Romans 6:16. If you yield yourself to the wrong thing, sin and things like that, you're going to become dead. You're going to die of that. But if you yield yourself to God and to righteousness, you'll become alive. So I began to explain to them how God was teaching me, how I could tell whether it was God or the devil who was talking to me. And there wasn't a sound in that whole place. And when I was done, you know, and I left and I told Gene, I don't want to come back anymore. You know, we went for 2.5 years. And the chaplain over there told us that the return rate had gone from 84 down to 47 for children in the diagnostic center. So the Lord uses all kinds of things to try to teach you to love. And I've got a verse here that it's in the Old Testament, but no matter how I try to get rid of this little piece of paper, it won't get rid. So I'm going to read it. And this is in Ezekiel 33:31. And they come unto thee, now God is talking to Ezekiel about the people. And they come unto thee as the people cometh, and they sit before thee as my people. They're going to church acting like they belong to God. And they hear thy words. You know, we come and we listen, and the men teach us, and the women teach us. And a lot of times because we don't like their personality or somebody told us something about those people, we won't accept it.
This is the end of part A. Please play part B. Thank you. Our website is www.LakeHamiltonBibleCamp.com and LHBCOnline.com. There are many free audio files there. It's like going to Bible school at home.